Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight, yes, we have another great show dealing with metaphysics, spirituality, science, and I thought we'd deal with the economy and the government tonight, because what the heck, you know, throw that in there too. You've heard me talk about some of this stuff before, but I thought a more in-depth show about this subject, particularly at this time, because I don't think those folks in Washington have got a clue. And I'm not talking about just Democrats. I'm talking about everybody. I'm saying, you know, they don't understand what the heck they're doing. If you haven't, by the way, read a great book by a fellow named Hayek, he won the Nobel Prize for Economics, and he also won a Congressional Medal right before he died in the early 90s for writing a book called The Road to Serfdom, which explains how and why socialism cannot, will not ever work as a system that protects and helps people, and rather it is the opposite. It's really a methodology used by people who have totalitarian ambitions and cover those up either subconsciously to themselves or more likely to the people that they rule. And the purpose is basically to control people, but it is unfortunate that it is also a failed system. And the more the world moves towards it, the more the world fails in its economy. It is true that a very, very small country with a lot of very, very good people in it and no corruption in government and probably virtually no leader in the government or someone that's only in for a very short period of time might be able to make a sort of modified socialist system on a democratic basis work. It certainly can't work for 300 billion or more people, 300 million, excuse me, or more people like in the U.S. It could work for maybe for 10,000, small town, you know. That might actually, but that's something far from what we're going to be talking about tonight, because I'm talking about the United States and as a model for other countries as well. So if you live in another country and you're listening to me from there, be aware that this could be applied in most parts of the world today. Okay, so what am I saying? What am I talking about when I say a spiritual economy and government? Spiritual is the thought of our Creator or God. That's what I mean by the word spiritual. And applying that thought to how an economy and government, in my opinion, should work or could work, both possibly, is what this show is about. So that's what I'm going to be explaining, how we can move in that direction. Now, can we do it right away? Maybe, but I don't think so. Maybe over a few years, and possibly with a person in office such as our present president and a number of the people surrounding him who, in my opinion, are seeking power and control and probably wouldn't mind having a totalitarian type of government and certainly are socialists. These people, unfortunately, will bring us to the brink of disaster if they don't bring us over it. And in that process, we may be looking in the near future for some solutions. I'm going to suggest them tonight, hoping that before we get to that terrible point, we can maybe make some of these changes. If we can't, it's something for the future. But in any case, and maybe for other countries, it could be implemented even before here in the U.S., which is presently under such a serious problem in the governance issue. Okay, let me proceed now. And by the way, if you want to call in, you can, of course, and you should have the numbers if you're listening online. But if you're listening over the telephone, I'll give you the U.S. number, one of the numbers, which is an 800 number, 877-876-5227, just in case you got an extra line to spare and you want to call in. Or you could hang up and call in. That's another thing if you're listening. I hope you don't do that because I don't know how long you'll be online, et cetera. But it's probably, you know, you may. That's a little of a show. Okay, let's start off with some ideas. The first is a concept. I just want to present this concept that the majority of the things and I'm going to say majority, let's say half. Half of the present purposes and uses of our federal government are not for the betterment or improvement of liberty or justice or economic freedom or most other kinds of freedoms. The government doesn't exist for those purposes, and it doesn't exist for helping people to have happiness or some type of ability to develop and create themselves and gain prosperity if they seek it. All the things that we generally accept as our purposes of existence as a country and government, I believe that about half of the government's actions do not support those things, and do in the present legislation and legislative processes and the present president and his administration do not achieve those goals either. As a matter of fact, they're doing pretty much the opposite. That's my my premise, and I don't know if I'll have enough time to go into all of the reasons why I think that, but nonetheless, I'm letting you know ahead of time that in giving some consideration to this whole idea, I did go through quite a few possibilities of why the government isn't working all that well. Okay, so if that's the case, then the cost of government, which is huge, by the way, is also a kind of multiple cost on our economy, because if the government is not doing the things that I suggested it was supposed to be doing, and it's doing some of the opposites, it's not only costing us money for it to do that, which is a huge hit, by the way, but you can triple or quadruple that in terms of its effects on people's lives in terms of the economy. So let me give you an example of that. I love today's time, the fact that we've got 2 hours. That's just great because I give examples, and it's so much easier to understand all the stuff I talk about. Okay, this is one way to look at this. Let's take a fairly simple example. The Environmental Protection Agency. I used to be all in favor of there being an Environmental Protection Agency, especially when I was quite young, actually, when it first came into existence in the early 70s. I thought it was good because there were a lot of things wrong with the environment at that time, particularly in water pollution more than air pollution. But we'll say there was a lot of problems, and I thought that somebody had to be addressing these problems. So coming up with an EPA seemed like a pretty good idea at the time. The problem is that the EPA has been usurped in its mission by the administration that's presently in office. And what they're being used for now is to gain control over people's lives, especially through the economy, and to, in effect, destroy the economy so they can reestablish a new economy based upon socialistic principles and communistic principles. There's a somewhat difference between the two, but there's a mixture of both. And there's different kinds of communism. But again, today I can't go into everything. I'm just going to kind of touch on the things that are peripheral. So what does this mean? Well, it means that something that was a good thing, I thought, anyway, 40 years ago, has turned into a pretty terrorizing thing. And we're only beginning to see what's going to happen, because in a year or two, when this full plan is implemented, the EPA is going to control a tremendous amount of the economy through cap-and-trade types of issues, and then through just edicts and controls outside of legislation, because we're moving towards a dictatorship. Now, you may not think that, but what happened yesterday, I'm going to just tell you what happened yesterday. About 1,000 old relics of World War II that are M1 rifles. These are really old. They're not anything like the technologies that we have today. Anybody who wants one is a collector. They're not really, you know. But 1,000 of these are presently available through the South Korean government because basically they took charge of them. They've been storing them, and I guess they own them now. And they had made a deal to sell them in exchange for, I don't know, some type of commerce issue with various gun dealers to just be able to sell them to people who wanted to collect them. The Obama administration a year ago said they weren't going to deal with gun issues, and they stayed away from it because they thought it would hurt them politically if they did. But yesterday they reversed that and decided that the Second Amendment doesn't apply to M1 rifles, I guess. And they said that they're not going to allow those rifles to enter the country because they would increase the lack of safety that is presently available in the United States. So M1 rifles that people barely ever fire and that are based upon collecting are now considered unsafe. Well, if they're unsafe, what's coming next? I just want you to see that that's one thing, and that was not done through Congress, no legislation. That's just an executive order. He's made more of those in a month than some other presidents have done in years. Okay, so that's one example. Let's take some other examples. I don't want to get too far in the examples because, again, we'll take up too much show. But for those of you who don't know, the FDA is on steroids, literally. They're going against everybody who's using them, which may or may not be a good thing. But they are using them themselves to increase their power tremendously. They have sued several major companies, Coca-Cola, General Mills. For what? Well, General Mills on their Cheerio boxes says it's good for heart health. Because it can and does lower cholesterol by a small amount, but it still does if you consume it. Well, the government, the FDA says that that's a claim they can't prove. And they are forcing them to take the boxes off the shelves that say that, and they sued them for like $100 million or something, some big number. I don't know what it is exactly. And with Coca-Cola, they decided that they think that Coca-Cola shouldn't be selling a drink called Vita something or other, and because it implies that it's a healthy drink when it actually has sugar in it or an artificial sweetener, one of the two. And the government has decided those aren't really that healthy for you, so they're not going to let them sell that drink anymore with any claims that there are vitamins in it, which implies that it's in some way healthy for them. Honestly, they filed that suit 2 weeks ago. I think it's important to recognize that this is tyranny. I mean, these are not just, well, the government's looking out for us. They're not supposed to be making choices of this nature on anybody. Why did they choose big companies? Because they only have to win a few of these suits before they intimidate the heck out of everybody else. I mean, if Coca-Cola and General Mills get sued and they lose, I guarantee that little companies who are making all kinds of nutraceutical products and herbal products, such as the ones I'm associated with, are going to absolutely vanish overnight. Then what's going to happen? Well, a lot of other bad things. It's in the health care bill that they can do this, by the way, just in case you're wondering. Okay? It says in the health care bill that anything the government deems by a committee to not be a healthy lifestyle choice, they can limit or prohibit because it affects the cost of health care to which they are now paying. Yep, it's in there. For real. If you don't think we should get rid of health care bills like that, maybe you should turn the dial. Because I think that's absolutely nuts. Absolutely nuts. And that's only one of the bad things, and there's a lot of stuff in there. Remember, they didn't read the health care bill, the people who voted on it, so they're gonna claim they never knew it was there. Okay, so getting back. There's our examples, but since this administration's come into office, there are hundreds, maybe over 1,000 examples. It's a scary number. Some of it's in legislation, and probably the majority is through executive order or decisions about how agencies are handling things. Okay, let me go on now. So what am I going to suggest? What am I suggesting we need to do? Well, let's take the agency issues, and agency by agency, we should eliminate any agency that is no longer functioning as what it was supposed to be, an arm of the people, a way for the people to get a better government, and instead is acting as a dictatorial channel being abused and taken over by the administration and or Congress. So this is, and if you go through the departments and if you look at what they're doing, you could either cut down some departments by a half or you could eliminate some altogether. I am suggesting at this point that, strangely, the EPA go away, even though I want you to know that I wouldn't have thought that way, simply because there's just no way to deal with them in any way that's rational. And they have to, some type of EPA has to exist. So what I'm going to suggest is that the states be given some, about half, of the funds that the EPA presently uses for developing state-by-state EPAs, if they choose to, that deal with more local and more efficiently the environmental problems in each particular state. But again, it'll be then closer to the people and less likely to be abused. This is what I'm suggesting that we consider as an option. What else am I going to say? Now let's get to the big stuff. All right, you ready? I hope you're getting excited about this. We're getting rid of all taxes, all. And this is if some of you may be familiar with Huckabee, this is a little bit sort of like what he said. It's a modification. Getting rid of all taxes except for a once-only applied, once-only, at the retail level to final consumer of either a service or a product, value-added tax, or sales tax of sorts. That tax, as I worked it out, will be no more than 20%, 20. And by constitutional amendment, this is my suggestion, it can never go more than 25% for more than 5 years and then has to be rolled back unless there's a good enough reason to do so for any longer, and each time it has to be voted upon, not by just Congress, but by the people of the United States. The reason for doing this is because government grows and is controlled by its income. If you limit its income, you limit government. And this is one thing the founders could not agree upon. We need to agree upon this because if we don't, there's no end in sight to the corruption and other problems we have. I've got other things I'm going to suggest, but this is the first place to start. We're getting rid of all taxes. What about unemployment tax? What about all those other included? I guarantee it. At 20%, as long as we're not in some strange, very costly war, something on the order of Vietnam. If we're up into that range, then they could up it by a few percent. Or if there's some other drastic thing that has to be paid attention to, that could be upped, but only for a short period of time, and then it has to be reestablished. So this is my suggestion. Now you say, well, 20% doesn't sound like very much because we're getting rid of excise taxes, we're getting rid of sin taxes, you know what those things are. Now, things like taxes on cigarettes and stuff that everybody says, well, that's okay, I don't smoke. But the point is, and I'm really against smoking on a personal level. I think people are crazy to smoke. The point is that the issue here is that you don't use taxes, which grows in a darkness, even an evil in the government, to control a social problem. You educate people. You help people to find other ways to deal with the issues, but you don't force the issue by taxation because it has a worse consequence. All right, so this is one tax. It's the 20%, and it just covers everything. And you're going to say, well, is that really going to work? And I can guarantee, I've gone through the numbers, I know you're going to say, oh, well, how can I trust this guy? He's an economist. I guarantee that will be sufficient, that amount of money, provided that, again, the entire government is going to be cut about in half. Remember that. So some of the expenses that we have, which are significant in government, will be gone. And then in addition to that, I'm going to suggest some other changes. Now, you're going to say, oh, my God, this guy's going at it with a hammer and a chisel. Yeah, I am. Why not? Because if we don't do some things that are pretty far out and radical, the budget as we understand it in the present circumstances, the United States is due for a collapse. We're going to go bankrupt. And I'm not kidding you about, oh, well, bankruptcy, girl, really. No, I mean the real deal. The 30s depression will seem like the good old days for those that can remember, because this is going to get much, much worse than we ever, ever had. This is going to be really a bad thing. We've got to do something right away. And someone who wants to take over the government, it's a wonderful thing, because it makes it easier for them to become a tyrant. Tyrants are easy to vote in and believe when things are so bad that you don't know, gee, if you're going to eat in the next week. You know, it could be a very scary issue. Okay, so I'm suggesting the following new, we'll call it, means of working with our government. I suggest that there be term limits. Now, you've heard me say this before. And the term limits that I think would be appropriate are the following, but I'm also going to suggest changes in the entire system of people running for office and other things. That the term limits for a congressperson would be 3 2-year term limits. That's it. And then you cannot run for another office for a period of 5 to 7 years. You could run again, but you have to wait 5 to 7 years. And you can't run for the same office ever again. That's it. You're done for that office. You could run for a different office, but it would be at least like 5 to 7 years later. So you can't be a professional politician anymore. I'm trying to break the link of corruption. Corruption is extremely serious in the United States. It's not been good even back to the days of the founders, and certainly within 20 years of their founding the country, we already had significant levels of corruption. So corruption is a real problem, because they thought term limits weren't necessary, because in a democracy, the term limit should be the vote of the people. Well, they didn't play in on the fact that we would seldom have more than 60% of the people ever vote. And they also didn't plan on a lot of other issues that get into problems with large democracies. Large democracies like we've got have a tendency to become lazy. People just don't seem to care about really what's going on, because it's too distant. The size makes distance in psychology between the people who are running the thing, running the government, and the people who are voting for them. There's not enough connection. And we have great communication methods today, and yet there's still not enough connection. You could imagine how little there was. You go back 100 years ago or more. Okay, so corruption is a big issue. Term limits are absolutely necessary. Let's go to the Senate. 2 6-year terms in the Senate. That's the max, okay? You get 2 terms there. And then we'll keep the 2 4-year terms for the presidency, which is a more dangerous position. You got to be really careful with that one. So I liked all those. That's what I'm going to suggest. These will all have to be done by amendment, by the way, I believe, because we're changing the Constitution. And then something I've suggested in the past, I would try to implement that each politician, each person of office, would be in that office at the leisure of the people. And if the people collectively vote in a quorum vote, where there's at least half of the people voting or more, over the internet in some secured process, but it's not going to be any less secure than voting machines and other things are, they can then usurp any vote put before Congress on any bill. They can put their own bills in, too, collectively. And or they can choose to not vote over the internet, in which case they have a republic, and the republic, the representatives, can vote themselves. In every situation, the representatives still have their own opinions of how they're going to vote, which are given out sometime, and actually we'll read all our bills, but we'll force that to be a part of it. If a representative makes a vote that they haven't read the bill on, they're out of office. One time, goodbye. Go home. We'll find someone else. Thank you. But at any rate, and it'll be part of their oath of office as well. I think it kind of is right now, but nobody cares about it. At any rate, so the object here is that if enough people want to decide themselves because they don't like what their representatives are doing, they can do it. That's a representative, that's a non-representative democracy. That's a real full democracy. Always the problem with that is that you worry about the rights of minorities and you worry about whether people are going to become very emotionally involved. Some things will require three votes maybe over several months. Changing the Constitution might require 6 or 10 or 12 votes over 2 or 3 years. Consistently winning in order to change such important things as the Constitution. That prevents the emotional side of things controlling a whole large population. We're getting to the point where we're conscious enough to probably deal with this. 100 years ago, I don't know that people were either educated or conscious enough to actually work within this system, which is why the founders didn't. Also, the technology wasn't available, and it wouldn't have been possible or practical. It is today. So this is kind of a neat idea because it means that the people are truly the bosses. And if they don't like how their representatives are voting at any particular time, they just take over. They vote themselves, and the representatives are, and Congress people are just then advisors, which is probably all they ever should be. But anyway, that's the concept there. I kind of like that system. It still allows a republic, which is very important, to be able to function in case there aren't enough people who are truly taking responsibility for the government. But if you have a majority or beyond who consistently make choices that obviously are what they want to do, then that system seems to me to be the best we could possibly have at the present time. Okay, what else would I suggest? Now, I'm going through a lot of stuff tonight, so this is going to be a fun show. I believe that the government should stay out of some areas of life entirely. I talked about a couple of them, but remember, we're also getting rid of a tremendous amount of emphasis on taxation. The collection of taxes will be much easier when you only have one tax that you're going to collect and everybody's being charged the same rate. It's going to make a lot of sense. And again, I am suggesting, and I really hate there being a tax on services because we haven't had it much in most places, but this would be a tax on all end user sales. And the purpose in doing this is that it's universal and it's easier to gain understanding and use of it, as well as information. There'll be almost universal compliance because people will be paying much less in taxes overall, and there'll be a feeling of fairness about it. And also, it may cut down, some people would say, it may cut down consumption, but we already have sales taxes that are equaling, in many places, half of this amount already. And we're talking about getting rid of it. Now, you could say, well, what about the states? Aren't they going to institute even more sales taxes so the government is involved? No, just the opposite. The states will be limited by amendment to a maximum, in my opinion. This is how I would do it, to a maximum of 5% sales tax. That could go up to 7% again with the same concept. There's emergency, but then the people in that state vote whether or not it should stay or not go or whatever. So most of the time, it'll be no more than 5%. Some states may go for much less than this. And again, state governments will start behaving better and be even more efficient than they already are, which is considerably better than federal government is. And by the fact that the federal government is now less corrupt, or preferably without almost all corruption, if we can make it that way, and provide a really good example for the states, people will get used to the idea of limited government, and they'll want more of it in every quarter, from the local level all the way up to the federal system. If that is really part of our consciousness, and that's what I'm suggesting. We're changing the consciousness of people because we're making government and economy spiritual, And remember, if you're following the thought of God in such a big way as that, it's going to affect everybody and touch everybody's life. It should improve the consciousness of people in general. So I have more, we'll say, purpose in mind than what I'm suggesting through these relatively mechanical changes I'm suggesting right now. Okay, what about healthcare then? I mean, this is a big subject. I would like to get to, through most of this before we take a break. What about, you know, the mechanical stuff? Because I want to talk about some more meaningful things. But healthcare. This is going to sound strange, but I'm going to suggest that there is no more governmental healthcare, including Medicare. Oh, boy. People of my age group are all going to come after me. Yeah, I'm an old guy, but, you know, young in heart. And here's the point. Why are we concerned about healthcare when ultimately, from a governmental side, ultimately people are most concerned about wanting to be healthy and stay healthy, and one of the reasons they're not is because of economic strife and poor, we'll say, resources in terms of the way that they use and or abuse the resources, and also not having enough of some, we'll say, free spendable money for some people. By doing what I'm suggesting, everybody becomes wealthier. When you become wealthier, you become generally healthier. Not everybody does, and I'm going to go along only with this as a general idea. So there's some increase in health for people just by doing the first things I started to talk about. That's the reason I talked about those things first. But there's a lot more to this than that. But health care, in my opinion, should be offered to everybody, but only in one way. As a, we'll call it major medical, and I'm going to suggest a number which could be changed, say $15,000 in today's money. Anything less than $15,000, you're on your own. You want to pay for a doctor visit, you go pay for a doctor visit. You want to go get some kind of medication, you get the medication. But it's going to cost you out of your own paycheck. Now, what about Medicaid? People who make less than, say, $15,000 to $20,000. Well, you can't expect them to pay $15,000 before they get any kind of major medical. So instead, those people are supplemented to the amount that they don't get enough income to pay for the differences between what they do make and the major medical. And people can even have accounts, just like we've had before, where they use those accounts to pay for some of their medical bills in the future. Those accounts are encouraged in various ways, not dealing with taxes, though. You don't want to make it based upon a tax-based system. The VAT takes care of almost everything that anybody needs, but when we and included in the VAT numbers, the 20% I gave you, was this major medical policy. Everybody gets it that needs it, but there is a means testing for it. People who make more than, say, three times the major medical amount, have to pay a higher amount, percentage of major medical. Because this is a government giveaway in sorts, and it's mostly a safety net. It is not meant to just give people health care coverage. It is meant to help people who, for one reason or another, are not doing very well. And it's also to help people who have chronic illnesses who can't get private health care coverage, or have some kind of pre-existing condition in the chronic condition as well. And they're going to get excluded. So they get this other side taken care of. If they don't have much money, then they also are supplemented. This is kind of a little bit of socialized, but it's very collectively controlled. The thing that's dangerous about socialism is when the collective is not universally applied, and when you have rationing. Neither can happen in this system because it comes out of the same VAT that I told you about. And believe me, that VAT is going to always have a significant amount of plus amount of money. Now, you might say, oh, come on, how do you know that? Well, because I went through some of the numbers, and I know it. But you can figure it out yourself. You go, you start doing some of the math that I suggest, and you will see that it actually does work. And it's just that we have been, the wool has been pulled over our eyes for the last century. Before 1914, we didn't even have an income tax, or 1913. I mean, the crazy thing is that we are accustomed to believing that the government needs all this money, and it doesn't. Okay, so what about Social Security? Same concept. If you make more than a certain amount of money, it's a means test. Social Security, I realize some people believe, well, I paid in, so I should get out. But most people get out almost everything they paid in within 5 years. And then they just take the money from the younger people. So the real truth of it is that it should be means tested. People who make $30,000 to $40,000 in today's money or more, they just don't get any Social Security. They don't need it. And people who make significantly or some amount less than that start getting Social Security. Again, it comes out of the VAT. There's no extra Social Security tax. That's gone with the single system that I'm discussing. When I said no taxes, I meant no taxes besides the VAT. That's it. Unless there's local or state, that's a different issue. But I'm talking about federal right now. Okay, so you can say, well, but I make $50,000 a year and I like getting all my Social Security. It adds another $10,000 or $15,000 a year to my income. Yeah, that's great. That's cool. But I don't think that it's a good enough argument to claim that the government should be paying people who make enough money to live comfortably. Not maybe in any elaborate style, but comfortably. I don't think that's a good thing. What about age? I think the age is a couple years too low right now, and age should remain whatever it's set at, and I think about 68 would be the age I would pick for people who need Social Security to get it, but there's still SSI and people who have problems and can't work. That's still part of the system. It's not going to go away. So all I'm suggesting is that we no longer kid ourselves and make nonsense issues where we take all the Social Security money and use it for other things anyway, and then expect the people who are working who are half the age of the people who are receiving benefits to pay for them. That just makes no sense. And again, anytime you get to that kind of collectivism where a special class of people are receiving a benefit that the others are paying for, it's a very, very bad system. Again, read Hayek's book, which is excellent about that very point. He describes how it almost always turns out to be totalitarian, and it bankrupts itself at the same time. It's the most interesting idea. But again, I don't have time. I could spend 2 hours in this one guy's book. I'm serious. 2 hours, easy. But you can read it. I got mine on Amazon. I don't know. You can get it a lot of different places. Probably your local bookstore can get it, and they can order it for you if it's not available. Road to Serfdom. It's a great book. Okay. So we're kind of running out of time for right now. So what we'll do is we'll take a break. When we come back, I'm going to apply more of the spiritual principles involved in some of the things I've talked about. I'm going to talk about some more of them. I didn't finish them all. But I'm going to get into some of the things. So it isn't just nuts and bolts, but nuts and bolts are sometimes helpful because a lot of people say, well, I want to know how this is really going to work. Okay, I'm telling you how it's really going to work. Okay, we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Okay, we're back. And this is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. I don't know if that all worked out in that break or not. I heard a couple confusing things on it, but anyway, we'll see. Anyway, let me continue on here. I'm going to go a little further with nuts and bolts because I think that it's important to maybe get a sense that this is real and we could really do it before I talk about the overall bigger picture of world processes and God and just things that, you know, I would call more metaphysical and spiritual than this practical side. But I want to go into some other elements. Now, some of you know we have a Department of Education. We didn't used to, if you go back 100 years ago. But things like that, why should there not be a federalized Department of Education? Well, there's a very good reason, and it goes something like this. If the federal government is involved in an area as big, huge, as what education really entails, it has too much control over people's lives. Let me give you an example of how and what I mean by that. About 4 or 5 months ago, or more now, I'm sorry, about a year ago, the Obama administration decided for the first time to take over all student loans and to dole out money to people who want to go to higher education schools, including technical schools, which, you know, anything beyond high school, by applying directly to the federal government deciding what and where a person might go to school. Now, I want you to think about this. How does that affect people? Well, it makes the younger generation immediately subjected to governmental rule. It gets them used to the idea that big government and even tyranny is okay. It's teaching them a process subconsciously. And it's meant to do that, in my opinion. I know that sounds very dark, but you already realize that I think the things that are happening today are very dark. And so that's a bad thing. That's a really bad thing. But it goes a step further. Because the government is not only controlling how and what people might think, what schools they can go to, they control the educational institutions themselves, because if the educational institutions themselves don't teach what the government wants, then they won't lend money to people so they can go to that institution. And it gets worse than that. Each person becomes indebted to the government, now. And the government controls that debt. People who play ball with the government may have the debt waived in the future. Or some other kind of favor is given about it. And those who don't, well, their loans might get accelerated. They're not going to the right schools and doing the right kind of study. You see how big that is. There's no reason for it. There's no reason to have a Department of Education, because the Department of Education is supposedly about what? Education should be done on a local level for the people who live in and around the institutions. And lending should be done by banks or other institutions, as it has always been until last year. These are dangerous times, very dangerous. Now you might say, well, the government hasn't done anything like that yet. Well, they actually have in a couple of circumstances, but not anything as draconian as what I suggest can and I believe will happen. It's just that they have to do these things in stages, you see. There has to be a good reason for them to take the power and control away from the people. They're just waiting for the right time, the right crisis. They love crises. Never let a crisis, an opportunity of a crisis, pass by you. Okay, so get rid of things like that. And you can say, well, what if you got rid of the education department? What would really happen? You wouldn't have no child left behind. You wouldn't have people running for office as president and say, well, I want to improve education in this country. If you want to improve education in this country, the best way to do that is at as close a level to the institution and people that are attending it as you can get, which is usually local. It's not even state level. And you want to also provide people with the freedom of clear and complete choice based upon their own will, desires, conscience, leanings, beliefs, all those things. You need to be part of the process. And you can't do that from the Department of Education in Washington, D.C. You could only do the reverse, by the way. Because anything you say about one part of the country is almost, and when it gets to education, almost somewhat opposite in other parts. Why is that? Well, because we have a federal system where people live in certain areas because they prefer that particular system of both education, etc. If you think about it, what is the choice of people who have children or people with even young adults who are going to even college sometimes? What is the choices that people first make about where they're going to live? The schools. So how important is this, what I'm talking about? Well, if you have children, you already know. For those of you who don't, you'll find out. Or even if you're never going to have children, you're going to know somebody, have a family member who's going to be affected by this thing. And already is. Okay, so these are big ideas in terms of limiting government. So when I talking about EPA, I'm also talking about whole departments. I talk about the department head, that part of the government gone. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. Now, some people say, well, what about a department for peace? You know, everybody wants peace. We should be, you know, we used to have a war department when we were deeply in war. But here's the concept. Government shouldn't be deciding that we want peace. We should be deciding we want peace and telling government when and how it can violate the peace. And again, I already went over one way of doing that by us having a more democratic but still republic society. And this is what I'm saying is also part of becoming spiritual, which I'm going to get into. It's coming, I know. I have still got nuts and bolts to take care of, but we're getting closer. We're getting closer. All right. What else do I suggest that we seriously consider changing? Well, I have a big deal going on with judges. One of the things I've discovered is it's very difficult to reprimand or deal with a corrupt judge. Judges have far more power and control if they're corrupt than just about anyone else in any other office. It is true, a few times a year, a federal judge is impeached. Maybe once or twice a few times. Not very often. For the number, it's a very small number. And some years, that doesn't happen at all. And once in a while, on a local or state level, a judge is found guilty of doing something. But it's really rare. In comparison to, in comparison to any other office, I think judges have pretty much a complete control over what they choose to do. Now, the argument would be, well, if you could sue judges, if you can bring them to task, then people would do that just because they made decisions they didn't like. Well, maybe. I have some suggestions. First of all, the idea of a bar review of judges is nonsense. The legal system is not capable of regulating itself. That's out. As a matter of fact, I think, in all honesty, that the Bar Association should be greatly limited, and on a local level and on a county and state level, a lot of what the bar does should be tasked to back to the people. Again, using democratic systems with only representatives involved in situations that involve judges or other high officials. Now, what I'm suggesting here is a real change in both the criminal system and in how you or how we want to live in an non-corrupted society. Since our society is so corrupt right now, politicians we can somewhat deal with by limits in terms. And that would mean even people on if you have it in your state, you know, like the Corporation Commission or things like that. Even that could be limited. But it should go further than that. The people should have a right to examine the doings of any official and to determine in their mind, based upon their own vote, again, on a democratic principle, whether someone should be investigated and brought to task. They should not be a jury. That's a different purpose. But they should be able to order investigations on those people that they think might be corrupt. That's what I'm suggesting is a change in the system. It's almost like everybody becomes part of a grand jury that can convene itself and decide whether there is cause for further investigation about any official. You know, I know some of you are cringing right now, particularly if you're attorneys, and especially if you're a crooked judge. But this is what I'm suggesting, because we don't have a means at the present time of dealing with all the corruption that is around us, and it could take decades or a century before we get rid of most of it if we go at a snail's pace by just changing on a political scale. I don't even know if it'll work just doing it politically. So I'm suggesting a change in the method of law enforcement, that we can convey effectively a grand jury of the residents of a certain community, and they can demand an investigation, which has to be followed. Wow. Tell me about that. I'm talking about by at least a majority vote now here. I'm not talking about, you know, like you get 10 people out of 1,000 who get on the internet and vote for it and suddenly it's done. No, I'm saying that this has to be something that is certainly a majority vote, which is the same way in a grand jury, by the way. So this is what I'm suggesting. I'm not suggesting, by the way, that grand juries in and of themselves are great things either. But I'm saying this is like a super grand jury, which has a different feel to it and a different methodology in a sense. But also they could replace grand juries in some circumstances. Very, very interesting idea. Okay. What other nuts and boltsy things do I have up my sleeve? Well, you know, one of the things that kind of irks me about, and again, I've been talking a lot about the United States, but it kind of irks me about the whole concept of governing in general, is the principle that people who have been elected find it much easier to get elected, mostly because of corruption, by the way. You can determine the level of corruption by the number of incumbents that get reelected. The higher the number, the greater the corruption. I'll get into why later, but that's basically... So in this country, in the United States, it's huge. So the corruption is huge. All right, so I'm going to suggest that people that wish to run for office do so. They can supplement this money I'm going to talk about on their own if they want, but they cannot get money from supporters or from parties. They can only get money from public funds or use private money of their own. Now you could say, whoa, what are you talking about? Wouldn't that get rid of the parties? It might. What it more likely is going to do is going to force the parties to become more ideological and more spiritual and less power-based and economy or money-based, material-based. Because the present system is corrupting in the fact that the parties themselves work on money. When government runs itself by who has the most money, and therefore who has the most power from using money, then corruption is right behind. So I'm suggesting a total change in the way that people fund their own elections and the process. And some of this process is also based upon, from the VAT tax, people receiving funds, getting free airtime on various media, in various media and other things, magazines, newspaper time, or we'll say ads, et cetera, that they can allocate as they choose to, but a certain lump sum is given for each kind of office. And everybody's kind of on a level playing field, except they can supplement if they want to pay in with their own money. And you say, well, then the rich would just buy their offices. Well, maybe. But here's an interesting point. Each time a person does put money in, they have to say on the ad or in the ad that they're using, or the means that they're using to communicate with the public, exactly what proportion of that ad is their own money. So when you get on, hi, I'm running for Congress, and my name is John Doe, and this ad is being paid $35,000 by you folks, the government and the people, and I decided to put another $12,000 of my money in too, because I'm betting that I know what I'm talking about. Now, you may not think I do, so let me explain. All right? You got it? You understand what I'm suggesting? One of the problems with people putting money in themselves is, to a large extent, the public are unaware of it, how much. Now, there are reports, and they're supposed to submit them, et cetera. The fact of the matter is the election's usually finished. May not actually have taken place, but it's finished by the time a lot of people get that information. So what I'm saying is that this is done each time somebody says something or does anything that is helping them to get elected. And that's a good idea. I don't want to prevent people from being able to spend their own money on wanting to get elected, because, number one, they're going to be very limited once they're in office in being able to be corrupt. So the rich are not going to want this that much. And the people who want to spend their own money may have some serious and good reasons that they think they should be in office. And they shouldn't be prohibited from saying so, and they shouldn't be prohibited from even using their own money. I believe in in freedom being more important than the small amount of potential corruption that could come from someone trying to buy an election. It's better to err on that side than the other. There may be no perfect way to deal with this problem, but it's the best way I can come up with for trying to make the whole thing work. And let's talk in nuts and bolts about how long it would take to do something as I'm suggesting. I have a lot more examples I'm not going to probably go into tonight because we're just going to run out of time. But the first point is that this cannot be done immediately because it would have to take, it has to be done by several constitutional amendments. And not having an administration other than the one that's presently in that is open to it happening in the first place. So that's the first step. Obviously, that puts us beyond 2012. And then I think it would take another 10 to 15 years to implement. Some of us may not even be around by then. Who knows? But the point is, this is a way, I believe, to save our whole country and to make this a much, much better place. Now, let's talk about some other elements to the economy that I think need to be changed almost immediately. We have to start doing some of the things that I suggested in some ways. If we don't cut down government spending, we're just going to go bankrupt, and in the process, the people that are presently in power will become more powerful and have greater control over us by a vast amount. Because their goal, in my opinion, is to create these crises so that it facilitates their ability to gain power. They love power. The last thing you want is someone running things that loves power. So what can we do about this? Well, if we're going to keep the present tax system, and I don't see it going away for 7 to 10 years, is to lower taxes. You've heard that before. But I would do much more than that. I would literally, if you want to get out of this crisis we're in right now, no more of this nonsense of buying jobs for people, which costs hundreds of thousands of dollars, and just buy votes for labor unions and things. But instead, let's have a complete tax-free withholding for 6 months or a year. Let's provide small businesses where most of the employment has been lost. And has, unfortunately, the small amount of employment that has increased has all been in the government. I don't know if you know that. When they talk about, well, we gain these jobs, they're almost all government jobs. That's very dangerous. The government grows, and then it has more power. And then it has more, wants to tax you more to pay for all the salaries of the people who are working for it. And then those people are going to vote for the government. That's it, because their job depends upon it, see? Okay, now, so what I'm suggesting is small businesses need a great deal of help. And they've been, every decision the Obama administration has made so far has in some way hurt small business. It's designed to do that. And you can say, well, what about this thing, the $30 billion he was going to give us? It had so many strings attached to it that by the time you're done, you won't be able to breathe as a business person. You might as well just hang out a sign owned and operated by the U.S. government and give up. I know. I'm in small businesses. All right, so let me go further with this. What do we really need to do for small businesses? Well, this concept of regulation on business is nonsense. What you need to regulate is that businesses do not do things that are illegal in the first place. As long as they're working legally within the law, you don't have to regulate them. Regulation is only meant for taxation purposes and control and power and influence. And in this particular case, to drive us towards socialism and away from capitalism in a free market system. So if you really want to increase small business, you have to increase free markets. And how does the government choose to do that? The first thing it does is it gets out of the way. It stops regulating because that's what stops free markets. So it's more what the government has to stop doing than what it has to do. in the beginning of the process. And we can do that at no cost, by the way. It saves money because all the regulation costs money, and it's needless money. Now, when I talk about regulation, there's a new act that you have to keep track of all your transactions, sales, purchases, everything from everybody to everybody. Well, that's insane. It's absolutely insane, and it starts next year. It's crazier than you can imagine. Lunacy. It's worse than the tax hikes that they're planning. And you can say, well, we lived without those tax hikes 10 years ago. Yeah, we did. But we weren't in the economic mess we are today. You've got to have lower taxes. Now, what about this business of taxing only the wealthy? Well, when you tax only the wealthy, you are creating a division among people. Instead of building a spiritually inclusive society, you're building an exclusive power society based upon, in many cases, fascism or Marxism. You're actually doing some really serious harm to people. We'll be talking about that in a few more minutes. So this is a scary thing. You don't want that at all. Okay, what can we do then to further foster business in if we have a free market system? Well, I suggest that large companies that are impeding the growth of small companies, we use the already on the books for 50, 60 years anti-monopolistic laws that allows companies to be in business and to do what they need to do without interfering with the enterprises of smaller businesses. We haven't done that for a long time, and we're certainly not doing it now. So we're not using the laws that were good laws, and we're inventing government control. What else should we do? Well, we need to have a real small business administration that works with commerce. I think that the Chamber of Commerce and the Small Business Administration should be almost merged, and I think the Small Business Administration should be privatized. Now, how do you privatize the Small Business Administration? You make it into a super bank that helps to lend to all other banks. So this is way different than what the Obama plan was of last week. That allows all banks to lend, provided that they don't hold on to money, and they must lend to borrowers of small, relatively small amounts. So they can't lend to Chinese people in China to build aircraft plants for General Electric in China. That makes no sense. That's actually happened. Instead, they have to give out $1,000 or $10,000, $25,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 loans to smaller businesses, very small businesses in some circumstances, to help them to gain strength and competition in the market. The criteria will not be the ability to pay back the loan. The criteria will be the efforts put in by the business itself to achieve the best possible results. So education becomes part of the bank's process. It offers, but it does not require, that assistance from consultants in related areas to help each business learn better how to be a better business. But it only does so on a volunteer basis. It does this to help preserve its own loans, yes, but it does not force the business to do anything. It only makes suggestions. Whoa, that's a kind of different idea completely, I guess. It's also charitable. And it provides, in its essence, the government is saying, well, this private money that we're giving is charitable. It comes out of the VAT. I'm saying get rid of the small SBA, because SBA is nonsense. All it does is give, it guarantees the loans to banks, and banks are refusing to lend the money to anyone except for super large companies who have A-plus ratings. There isn't a small business in the country right now that even has a B rating. I mean, they're all downrated because their business sales have gone down, and their ability to even keep employees fully functional has gone down. There's nothing. They're all being hurt terribly, and so they have bad, relatively worse ratings than they had 5 or 10 years ago, and so it's much more difficult for them to borrow any money. But borrowing money is necessary because if you aren't able to borrow money, you won't be able to create something new. Because creating something new always requires that you have investors. You can say, well, why not just have private investors? Well, these are quasi-private investors of a sort. I'm suggesting this administration be privately controlled by private investors. They can enter into it, and the government can enter into it, both. Some of the money comes from VAT. Other amounts come from investors. The banks act as a go-between sometimes. And the results are everybody gets paid back based upon their overall level of enterprise. Not just those of the business people, but those by those who are lending to them and helping them and doing whatever they can to assist. Will some people still go out of business? Sure. Will there be some losses? Yeah. But if you structure correctly, everybody will make money. That's an investor. The government will make money, actually. And the banks will make money, but there will still be some people who go bust on the risk-taking part, which is the business people themselves. You can't get rid of risk. You can't get rid of the fact that some people are just not going to want to do the job they need to do to accomplish the results. They may be dreamers. But whatever the situation is, or they may just get ill. They may have some other catastrophe in their life. They may get emotionally ill. Whatever the situation is, they may not be able to complete what they have attempted. They may just be fools, whatever. And not everybody will qualify. There'll be some people who are obviously dreamers, who don't have the capabilities to do what they're suggesting. And then the concept will be, well, go get more education. Make yourself more able and show that you're able to be responsible. And if you're responsible, then fine. We'll go for giving them a loan. You see how I'm suggesting this whole system be? It's a lot different than what it is now. I understand that. But this could change fairly quickly, faster than some other things. Changing the Constitution would take a lot longer. So we could change our economy with some of these ideas I'm suggesting now way faster. 2-3 years, we could be fully implemented in all the things I said. 6 months, we could be way better than where we are today. Way, way better. I've got more nuts and bolts ideas, but you know what? It's time to take a little breather here. I want to tell you about our product that we're coming out with. Yeah, we're going to do a little free enterprise here. And then we'll come back, and I want to tie this whole thing together with the concepts of God and spirituality and how we should be living in a very different world than the one we're presently in. But let me tell you about this new product. It's called Phi Chi Jizik. Now, the Chi is spelled weird. Spelled QI, because that's the Chinese spelling for the word Chi, because Chi is actually a Chinese word. A lot of people see it spelled C-H-I, which is the Americanized version of the word. But we decided to call it P-H-Y-Q-I, Jizik, because that really represents what it's all about. And we thought it was more appropriate. So what does this stuff do? You know, what I'm going to say, I'm going to say a disclaimer right now. I'm just giving you my opinion of this stuff. And I'm not saying that it does or doesn't do it, but I'll tell you what I've seen it do, and you can figure for yourself whether you think that's right or not. It seems to be a reliever of pain based on a totally different system. It was designed to do this, so hopefully it is doing this. And that is, well, you take a normal pain reliever. You try to shut down the response of the body. Sometimes it's an anti-inflammatory, so it's an inflammatory response. Sometimes it's a dulling or narcosis response. It dulls the senses of the body so that you feel less pain. These senses are really come from like 370 little meaning centers that are connected to the seven major chakras, which are the big senses and centers. And they're collectively put together in various ways to cook up to one of the seven centers, major centers. And the minor centers transmit that there's a pain going on. They're supposed to do that. And so when you're feeling pain, you should say, well, thank you, minor centers. And the smarter energies are called divinic in some metaphysical methods. Thank you for letting me know. But, you know, I do know it, and I can convince you that I know it by taking some 5-Chi Jisik. You're going to have a conversation with your body by taking 5-Chi Jisik, in my opinion. You're conversing through supplementation in a food you're taking, orally. Although it can be used as a colonic. That's another story. And so you're taking this stuff, and when you take it, the energies that are inside these extracts of herbs have a profound effect in the way that they communicate with these divinic energies. And they let the divinic energies know that they don't have to send the message as strong, because you already know, because you're obviously putting this into your system. And more importantly, possibly, they actually change the way the energy is being affected by retention or absence of chi energy flowing through them. That's where the chi part comes in. And so this stuff, it communicates, it also balances. It allows the chi energy to move in a more natural way through the centers. You can say, well, what's causing that problem in the first place? And it's caused by our own thought processes and behaviors. The more we're selfish, self-focused, both in thinking and feeling and behaviors, the more there is a sense of pain. Either the center is lacking energy because we're moving it wrongly into another place it shouldn't be, or it's inundated with energy because we're focused on some feeling or some desire or some activity or some whatever, even a thought. And that causes pain. So these herbs, in my opinion, change in a kind of backdoor method how we think, how we feel, and how we ultimately behave just by their use. Now you could say, oh, well, that's just crazy. Well, maybe it is, but I've been playing with them for a little while, and I can tell you that the taking of them improves consciousness, in my opinion, not just gets rid of pain. It provides a different standard now for what we call, I guess, an herbal supplement, but also something that truly is going to help provide health. Health is now connected to consciousness rather than to just some kind of allopathic outside thing that's affecting us. People that take this generally find long-term relief, particularly if they use it more than once. The first time you use it, you get mostly the reduction in pain, but the next few times, if you're consistent, you start noticing the consciousness-building effect, which is pretty cool. It's really interesting. And so this is something to consider in a major, major way. And I would like you to consider this, that in this process, we are talking about something that goes way beyond what most people would call a pain reliever. We're not going to be able to put anything of what I'm talking about on the label. You can forget about that. You put that on the label, you remember I told you about the FDA? They'll have 20 armed guards coming after us in 40 minutes. You know, you can't say things like this. But I'm telling you in an educational sense, an opinion I have. And it's important to recognize that this is based upon science, and science means that you, by doing the same thing over and over again, you get the same results. And that's what I mean by science, okay? And it starts right from the beginning. These formulas are created not by trial and error. They're created by literally going through what the chi energies are of each herb and how it affects each chakra and all this other stuff. And then the stuff is made, and it does exactly what it's supposed to do. Now tell me that isn't science. And it's repeatable over and over again with different formulas and with the same formula. Once you make it, it tends to work in similar ways in people. But you're not going to always get the same results in the same person or even in different people, because the energy, the chi energy, is moving. And one day it may be here, another day there. People may be selfish in certain ways at certain times and not others at other times. Their selfishness level may decline because the herbs themselves are helping to develop a better consciousness in them. That's what I'm hoping for. That's a lot to ask for some herbs. But it's worth a try. Now, is it like a narcotic? You take it and you feel like, oh boy, I'm loose, man. I don't feel nothing. I don't feel it. No, it doesn't get rid of your normal feelings. It just lessens or gets rid of, in one use, the pain. If it doesn't get rid of the pain in one use, the second one or the third one usually will. Amazing. Now tell me there's something like anything else out there that you could think of that will do that. And remember, we're not just talking about pain removal. We may be talking about healing in many different respects, but that we can't talk about. This is just amazing stuff. I hope you try it. It's not available yet except in the capsule form. You have to take literally twice as many capsules as you would in a tablet form. Tablet form is available in a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. By the end of this month, you should have it available. By right now, we have a limited supply of capsules. If you're willing to take a lot of capsules, yeah, you could order some from us. We'll put you on the list, as they say. But it's okay. And if you don't mind, I mean, we're talking like a lot of capsules. If you don't mind taking them, they're not that hard to swallow. It's just there's a lot of them. Then fine. That's all right. And you don't have to take a maximum amount for all things. If you got a minor little this or that, taking half or even a third of the maximum serving size they call is okay. That'll probably work for you. It really varies from person to person. And if you take it, if it's not working after an hour and a half, you take more. That's not like other kinds of things where you can't. You can do that. Now, you don't want to exceed the maximum suggested serving size. Why? Because you actually might do harm to yourself. You might actually shut down some energy system. You don't want to ever shut them down. And it's possible to do that because the herbs, while they are getting the chi to move better, they also are telling the devonic energies to cool it. I got the message. But when you're telling something in your body that, you're taking conscious responsibility for what you're doing. So you want to be careful about that as well. Okay, enough said. Let me move on now and come back to the more spiritual elements of what government and economy can do for us. When we look at what I last talked about, what I'm suggesting here is that the real problem with the United States and the whole world right now is that we have too low of a consciousness. Well, what is consciousness? Consciousness is the ability to see connections between things we have some knowledge about. First, we have to have knowledge, which comes from information. And knowledge is great. There's nothing wrong with knowledge per se. But if you don't understand how the knowledge connects to other knowledge, which is consciousness, it doesn't do you any good, and it may do harm to yourself and others. We have a lot more knowledge these days. You can get it off the internet, books, etc. But we have limited consciousness. What brings about a change in consciousness, in improvement? Well, making people more responsible is one of the things. The systems I've suggested about today, and a lot I didn't have time to talk about, will make people, individual people, more responsible for themselves. It also sometimes makes us more responsible for people who have serious problems being responsible for themselves, only to a minimal level, which we'll call the safety net. I don't believe in a society without charity and love and compassion. I don't believe in that society surviving. So you've got to have that part of it, but you still have to recognize that the first thing you're trying to do is to build consciousness in people. So you don't want to give them too much of anything without helping them to become more responsible, because you're hurting their consciousness then. And although you may be solving some problem in an immediate sense, maybe they have some warmer clothing or food or whatever, they may actually be becoming more selfish and less conscious. So we all need to be aware that any type of system that we develop needs to have built into it the awareness and the responsibility for helping other people to become more responsible. We should never ignore that. We should never develop a government system of welfare or whatever it might be that reduces the responsibility of those that are receiving, because we're hurting them in ways that's far greater than whatever we're doing in giving them warm clothing or food or whatever. You might say, well, they might die. Well, sometimes death is a better thing, because you go on to live in another dimension anyway, where you will be more conscious than living in an increasing level of selfishness in this life. The karma is horrific. You're not going to ever get out of it. So those people who do become more selfish because we're irresponsible in helping them to become more responsible are going to pay dearly. And then we have a collective responsibility that we're not obeying or not paying attention to. And that has negative national karma and world karma when you go to that level. So this is something we want to really be concerned about. Most karma, by the way, is individual. It is not collective because of the way the system works. God wants us to grow as individuals, but also have an awareness that there is a responsibility to all of us. How else can we grow consciousness? Well, responsibility is one. The next is education. Our education system sucks. It's so bad that I don't even know how to describe all the things that are wrong with it. But it has to start with this. If you don't have spiritual teaching, I'm not talking about religion. I'm not talking about even necessarily God. But if you don't have spiritual teaching of some sort that's incorporated within an educational system, it almost always will become dark. And that's where we are today. Yeah, we drummed spirituality out of most of the public schools. And what has that gotten us? Well, it's gotten us schools in which responsibility has declined for people to both learn and to treat each other in good ways and to be good, loving, law-abiding citizens and participants in the world at large. That's what we've done. Now, why did we do this? Well, because there's some people who are atheists, of course, and don't even believe in spiritual. They're probably not listening to this show tonight. But it gets worse than that. Those are not the main problems. A lot of people who are atheists are still somewhat spiritual. This is a misnomer. A person cannot believe in God, per se. There's no being. But they can have belief in spirituality. In other words, the things that God thinks are good, they believe are good. And the things that God pays or turns away from, they consider to be dark or evil or bad. So some people that don't necessarily say they believe in God, actually in a weird way do, but they don't know it, they believe in spirituality. Okay, spiritual factors are really missing from schools in the public arena. Sure, you could find private schools that are different, but But I'm talking about the general public schools. How do we improve that? Well, by making sure that everybody has the right to either express a belief or a non-belief in God in an open way and talk about it. And also to talk about the questions of ethics and right and wrong and all the stuff I've covered in this show and many others about trying to be inclusive with people, trying to help other people to be responsible by taking responsibility for them and yourself at the same time, and by freedom and incorporating freedom in thinking and in actions as long as it doesn't interfere with other people's freedoms in the school system. We've even given up in teaching free enterprise and an open free market economy in many public schools. They're actually teaching socialism or communism. It's bizarre stuff. Come on. That's nuts. That's dark. We fought so many wars and so many people have lost their life, physical life, and given up so and been tortured and given up so much so that we today are no more conscious than people were 100 years ago? Come on. We can do better. Education. We need to start educating our young people. And it isn't just in the classroom. It's what they see on television, the internet, these terrible games. I mean, some of the games that are out there, you know, are all about how to be a better bad guy, whatever that means. And being terrible and violent. I'm not saying I want to prevent people from being able to buy those. I think we need to have options, much better forms of entertainment than the darkness that is surrounding us. Now, I know the third rate's going out and things are bad about all this, but the point is that we can make a concerted effort to change so that we don't suffer through more generations. It's the children, our grandchildren, who are going to be suffering tremendously in a world that they helped to create, but we helped to create them into that world through terrible forms of education. Parenting and the responsibility of parenting does not stop at the schoolhouse door. It literally begins there for some people in some locales. Get involved. Don't let your child or children be miseducated, being misinformed, have the spirit driven out of them and forced into a predicament in which you literally have to take them out of the school altogether. Fight. Talk. Let people know that you have something to say about it and try to collectively get together with your friends, family, neighbors, so that this sort of thing doesn't become as bad or diminishes from the badness and the difficulties it's at right now. It's pretty bad right now. And it's going to be encouraged, unfortunately, by the present administration in Washington with their Department of Education and other departments as well, trying to go the opposite direction from what I'm describing. So please be aware that education is like an extremely important way in which people gain consciousness. What else? Well, families and family life are very critical. I know this is a touchy subject, but I think that most people need more than one parent. Now, I know a lot of people say, well, I got divorced because I couldn't live with my family or whatever. Well, if you got divorced for that reason, try to find a friend who can be like another opposite sex parent, if possible. Now, what about gay people? Should they have two people the same? Well, it's not as effective because there are problems with the way it's expressed to children. Some negative things do get through. But it's still better to have two parents in a gay couple than one, in my opinion. So the most important thing is love. But love, not the kind of love where you just, huggy, lovey, that kind of thing. Love that shows that you see your children as being souls, that you're helping to become more and more soul-like. Every step of the way, you're becoming a greater and greater soul. This is the most important element, probably, in raising children, is to see them more as souls than just as, well, he's just a little young, whatever, and he's going to grow up to be. See them more as a being greater than what their physical nature might be, what their emotional nature might be, and try to help them to find themselves as souls. This takes considerable effort, much more than normal parenting. If you're willing to, then go ahead and get some of the stuff I've written, the articles and books, etc., because it'll help you to raise your children as souls. And it's another kind of education, and it's another kind of way that we all can become more conscious. By recognizing that we're in illusion while we're physically here, we're detached to some extent from our souls, which causes us to be selfish. And we want to try to get closer to being our soul, which is the same, if you believe in God, as saying you want to get closer to being a part of God and co-creating with our Creator. Very important stuff if we're going to change our society to become more spiritual in general. What about charity? What about giving to people who need it? Well, charity would be, I think, better served by far if the government gets out of the business of trying to be a welfare state and allows charity to do what it's supposed to do. Charity is not a one-sided event. Charity is a way of developing givingness in the person who's giving as much as the person who's receiving, and together they're sharing something, or giving to a group, from a group to an individual, from a group to a group, or from an individual to a group. However it's done, the point is this act creates a synergy, which is very important, and you don't want the government doing it because it steals that from all of us, you see. The government can't do it anyway, because it takes a much higher level of consciousness than the government functions at. Our government is functioning way below the average consciousness of the individual. Average individual. So we have a really bad system in a way. Okay, so charity becomes critical if you're going to develop a true understanding of those that you are trying to be inclusive with. It also gives you an understanding of those who are different from yourself. And welfare doesn't do that for you. So it does a tremendous amount. And how does charity work? Well, charity is a state of mind of giving. And it involves ultimately giving up material things for some benefits of others, but mostly so that they become more charitable, more responsible, more loving, more spiritual, and closer to their souls. Now, I'm in a spiritual group, and we do that all the time. Almost everything we do is for everybody else that we're doing it for. I mean, we literally use almost all of our resources for others. Seriously. That's a very small amount for who we are. And that's it's pretty amazing when you think about it. We're talking a sizable amount, more than most people would believe, of resources are being given continuously. And everybody does it because we all believe in it. And because we do it in the highest and best way we think we can. And one of the ways is like we make some things that help people, but they also build consciousness and all the other stuff that we talked about. So this is a key element, we'll say, to making the system work. The corruption of charity is a welfare state. You have to not just limit it, but you have to end the welfare state. How do you end a welfare state? Well, got to get rid of the present people, because they're very much in favor of it. And you can't have class warfare constantly going on. It's all artificially created so that they can control things. Get rid of the welfare state by treating people as souls, even from the government level. The government doesn't see people as children that they're going to have to protect and take care of. They see people as needing to become adults if they're acting like children, and as needing to have as much encouragement as possible to be creative. And that means freedom. Now let's talk more about freedom. We need to change the society goal. Our goal right now has been moving, unfortunately, over the last 100 years or so, at least 90, but close to 100, towards a security system, security government, security society. We have sought security, and when you do that, you give up freedom. When you seek freedom, you give up some security. We need to go the other way. And it will produce some insecurity in some people. And some of that is real. In other words, some of the things that I'm suggesting tonight will make some people actually more insecure. But so much freedom will be given to them that the vast majority of them will grow in consciousness and will grow in meaning in life. And it's well worth the, we'll say, relatively small amount of insecurity that comes with it. Insecurity always comes with freedom. You can't get around it. And if you want to be totally secure, you will be completely unfree. This is part of God's plan, and you've heard me talk about this. God's plan is that we, as beings, eventually co-create with it, by our own choices, freedom, and that we're free to not do that. If we choose the dark side of life in evil, we choose to let other people supposedly take on our responsibilities of being free and creative, and we become non-creative, and we think we're more secure, we actually might even be more secure to some level, unless you consider part of security the ability to be a free person, because you give up your freedom. You can't have both. You can have some levels of security and have very high levels of freedom, but you can't have high levels of security and have much freedom at all. I hope you're following what I just said, because that sounded a little complicated, but it isn't that hard to understand. You can read Hayek's book. He talks about this, too. All right, so how are we going to manage more freedom? Well, the first is to not remove any rights that are guaranteed in our Constitution and not let anybody else do so. Like I talked about Obama yesterday with the guns. Well, someone should say, President Obama, you're going to be impeached for violating the Constitution. Your choice. What do you want to do? You might say, well, who's going to impeach him? Well, you got to vote the people in who will do that. Anytime someone says, I'm going to take your rights away because I don't like this, it's dangerous for it. He even used a security reason. He said that. People will be less secure. That's his statement. Yeah, they're going to be a lot less free, too. They can't buy a collectible rifle from World War II from the Koreans. That's been restored, I assume. That they can hang on a wall or whatever they want to do with it. I mean, it's just bizarre stuff. That is so crazy. You know? But there is an example. What else can you do about freedom? Well, you do need to put the fear of the people into people who are willing to and want to grab power and take our rights and freedom away from us. We have to let those people know there are some severe consequences for attempting to corrupt our system. And we're not going to take it very kindly. Now, am I suggesting violence? No. I'm not suggesting violence. When you resort to violence, it means that you haven't used your noodle. You haven't gone out and expressed yourself and collectively gotten together with other people to use the system that is there to prevent people from taking your freedom away from you. And you need to fight for other people in circumstances where there's corruption. We're doing that as a group. There's an evil group of people who we're fighting. And those people, some of them are judges. It's a terrible thing. And it's costing huge amounts of money and time and energy. But it's such a bad thing. And because it came to us, we have to fight it. We feel. Because it's something there that if it isn't like people like us to do it, then nobody else will for sure. And we already know they're not because it's so bad already. The corruption is terrible. It's a whole like county of people are terrible doing this. And it's known about by others. We talk to some lawyers and say, oh, yeah, I know about that. Well, why aren't you doing some of that? Well, what am I going to do? I give up my whole life for to try to work on solving that problem. Yeah, that'd be a good idea. That sounds like a good idea. How many people are losing their freedom? How many people are being hurt by a few corrupt judges and politicians and people like that? It's terrible. So we all have this ability to make sure that freedom is something everyone enjoys. I wrote a story. It's a novel, ostensibly a novel, but it's mostly based upon true events. And in it, I talk about the fifth astral subworld. And this group of people live in that world. And this is a real group that I visited. And they have a place they call Freedom Farm, and everything's free for them because they're against all the oppressive parts of that particular subworld, and so they go off on their own and do the thing. But they do nothing for the people who are entrapped and controlled by the rest of the system. They don't do anything, or they didn't. I think they may have changed by now. But the point is that this is weird, because here they call themselves people seeking freedom, but what they're really doing is running away and fearful, terribly fearful, of the people who want to take their freedom away from them. So they just go off far enough away so they're not bothered. That's not a solution. There's no place to run in this world any longer anyway. I mean, maybe a few hundred years ago you could have found some place to go, but now you can't anymore. I mean, there's no place like that. Let's talk about the global situation. I only got a few minutes left. You know, the United States is, and I've been talking mostly about the United States now, but is only part of the whole problem. What is the big problem in the world? Well, low consciousness. And it's allowed a whole bunch of different governments to be run by dictators who are mostly socialist, communist, Marxist. They use the economy side of it to be totalitarians. And these are evil beings. They're evil people. Now, what should we do about this? I mean, should we just sort of like say, well, it's their problem, you know, we got to let them be their own way? And no, I don't think so. I think that the spiritual way of looking at it is this, that we shouldn't go in and necessarily just shoot everybody dead. It's not going along with the program that we believe in. But we certainly should be very, very tough, much tougher than we've ever been since I've been on this planet. I'm almost 63 years old now. Much tougher than we have been most of the time we've been a country about allowing people to be subjected in such fashions. Now, I say allowing. Look at Hugo Chavez. I think our president may be in love with him, but let's look at him. At least some people in his administration are certainly in love with him. I mean, the president is more favorable towards him than that. And what is this guy? He is a total jerk. He is a totalitarian dictator. He is an extreme socialist, but he's a socialist using mostly Marxist ideology, similar to our government is in China, is moving into. And what is he doing there? Well, he's being permitted, literally, to subject the people. And the United States could put this guy out of business in about 3 months. I'm not kidding. we have chosen not to. It wasn't just this last administration. The one before it was not tough enough either. And they were far more resistant to him than the president. And the president one thinks he's probably doing everything right. But the correct thing to do is to literally tell anybody who does business with them that they don't do business with us. That's it. And we don't do any business with them. These guys run on their ability to control the economy. Their economy would tank in 3 months once that happened. Now, we had more of an ability to do that a few years ago than we do now, but we still can do it. We have an amazing amount of ability. You'd be surprised. We would have to do it unilaterally. You can't do it with the United Nations because the United Nations has been taken over by these puppets, by these people who are running things behind the scenes in many cases. They send ambassadors to the United Nations that are just puppets of a regime that is evil. And so when they vote, they control the way things go. The United Nations is pretty much useless. And we allowed that to take place, too. But getting to the bigger point here, without firing any shots, without physically going in and doing any kind of violence, I don't think that that's really going to solve the problems. Let's take Hugo Chavez. He just finds out that anybody that does business with him cannot do business with the United States, period. End of discussion. But that takes in even his evil comrades. Wouldn't like that very much. And if you do this with some other countries that are doing the same thing, before long, they can't survive. Remember, it isn't that you're not going to do business with just them, but anyone who does business with them, we don't. Now, is that going to cost us something? You better believe it. We're going to pay for it. That's a sacrifice that's involved in creating freedom. The payment is always some kind of sacrifice of some material thing, I can guarantee it, and also some other discomforts along the way. So you might say, well, the Soviet Union is a big supplier now and buyer of Chavez's oil from Venezuela. Well, good. Then we just don't do business with them. That's all right. They won't like it. I guarantee it. You know, the fact of the matter is, if the United States doesn't do business with half the world, we can survive, but they can't. We're keeping their economies afloat because we are doing business with them. Now you can say, oh, well, come on. How much do you think you're really going to get this done? Well, I'm telling you, it's possible. I want you to think about it. I'm running out of time, and I wish I had more. But until next week, at least, I'm afraid this is going to do it for us. So I want to also mention to you that if you haven't already called us, and I think I promised some people that I would say this. If you haven't already called us and you really do want some of the capsule formula of 5G, GZIC, let us know right away because we're going to run out soon. We've got a list. Believe it or not, we've got a list. And I was surprised at the number of people on the list. So, truly, you want some of that, let us know within the next few days, because I don't think we'll have any left after that. And we can't make any more. We're just running. We ran out of the small amount of ingredients we had to make it. Okay, until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.
Gary Renard, the author of The Disappearance of the Universe and Your Immortal Reality. And you're listening to bbsradio.com.
this painting that I made for you. It could be so heavenly.